Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Found Generation podcast, a podcast for young people. Ambition. It's a funny thing. When you don't have any, you're likely to fail. But when you have too much, you're likely to fail. How can that be? It's a question I've wrestled with a lot recently. Today's guest struggles with it too. Shani Suisa, are you ready for this, is the host of The Shani Show, the co-host of the David Suisa podcast, the podcast director for The Jewish Journal, the chief of staff for entrepreneur Jennifer Cohen, and that's just to name a few. She's also well-known in the worlds of cryptocurrency and mixed martial arts, and she's also launching an exciting project in the very near future. So how do you deal with this ambition? When you have all of these things going on, wearing all of these different hats, how do you prioritize? How do you determine what really matters? How do you let go? Shani and I will discuss these questions, and we'll also talk about how to overcome insecurities, the keys to creating content in 2023, how to not let other people's perception dictate who you are and how you feel about yourself, and so much more. I hope you all enjoy it as much as I do. So for every guest that I have on, I kind of go to their social media page, see what breadcrumbs I can pick up. I'm sure you do the same. And I couldn't help but notice, Shani, that your Twitter went conspicuously dark for the entire month of November. What happened there?
That is a hilarious first question to lead into. I have no idea. This is one of the craziest, most like obscure things that's happened to me on social media. I got suspended. My account was not just, it wasn't suspended like, oh, you're suspended for, you know, an infraction. It's like, you're permanently suspended is the notice I had. And all I could see was the same GoPuff ad with Cardi B at the top of my feed for literally a month. I would log in and I would see that. And then I believe I only got unsuspended because Elon went and started unsuspending all of the accounts that got mass suspended or whatever it was. So I was like in that mix, which is just one of the funniest things ever. But I don't know. My theory is maybe somebody reported me. But my other even more like interesting theory is that I think it's because I kept logging on. Every time I'd log on to Twitter, I wouldn't really tweet much. And I would just block all of the NFT bots that would tag me in the random NFT tweets. So I was blocking like 4 or 5 accounts a day. And I think that that maybe signified to Twitter like, oh, this person's a bot. They're blocking too much. So I honestly have no idea what happened. But hey, I'm back.
Well, thank God we have you back because you're a great follow on Twitter. And I then went to the Shani Show Twitter handle, which you were tweeting from. And so many other people were quote tweeting and responding, hashtag free Shani. So many tweets at Elon Musk. I don't know how I missed this on Twitter, this phenomena. This should have been one of the biggest stories on Twitter in all of November.
It was a hilarious saga. I love that I got so many people to tag Elon in that. It was just so funny because the real issue was that it was right when the World Cup was happening and I really wanted to live tweet the World Cup. Like no one wants to tap through 6 Instagram stories of various like, oh my God, what just happened, you know, during a random game. And I just really wanted to live tweet this freaking tournament and I couldn't do it. So that was really the big like angst when it came to that. That was just so upsetting. I think had it happened during any other month, I would have been probably more okay with it. But yeah, I can't believe so many people tagged Elon on my behalf. I really thank you to all those people.
That's incredible. So we went down your resume and some of the things that you're doing we didn't even get into because I'm not even sure what you're allowed to publicly disclose yet. So I want to start here because I'm dealing with this right now. I have so many ambitions, Shani. You know, you're a devout follower of my Substack page. I do the podcast. I do YouTube channels. I go on other people's. And that, like, that's the stuff I just do on my own time to fill my own personal goals. Then I'd work on a bunch of other stuff outside of that. And I have so many dreams and goals and ambitions. But the problem is when you try to accomplish everything at once, you don't really end up accomplishing anything at all. Sure, you make little bits of progress here and there, but you never actually do what you set out to do. But then my solution for that, to combat that, is like, well, you're not doing enough here, just do more. And then me being an overambitious person and not being able to give anything less than 100%. Like, each time I learn a new skill, I just have to apply that skill now. I can't go back to the way I used to now that I... So I can never take my foot off the gas is what I'm getting at. And I know you are similar to me. You're doing so many things right now. You already have so many ideas in your head circulating about the things that you want to do next year and 5 years from now. So how do you deal with all of that? Because I am going crazy.
Yeah, I live in like a dream world where I think that I can just accomplish everything all the time, all at once. And like last night, I was just sitting there. It was 2 a.m. I had just finished like all of my work. Like that's legitimately, I am working from the morning until I am sleeping at like the whatever o'clock in the a.m. I committed to a dinner tonight and I don't even know how or why I did that because I never get work done before a dinner hour. So I don't even like, it's just going to be so hectic, but I do need a break occasionally. But I was just sitting there last night, 2 a.m. and I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't even want to go to bed. I have so many more things I want to get done. And it's this crazy, I have to like turn off my mind. And it's so hard for me to do that. And I think even a bigger issue right now is the fact that I can't smoke weed right now. I can't smoke anything because my throat, I've been having issues with it for the last like couple months. And it's been a really big problem because weed used to be how I would shut my brain down, like how I would be able to calm down and relax and, you know, slow things down. And now that I can't do that, and I'm not crazy about like consuming edibles all the time, like it's just not really my vibe. So it's just been very hard to slow down. I haven't had a single day off at all in the last, I don't know, 3.5, 4 months. Like, I'm not even kidding. I haven't taken a Saturday. I haven't taken anything. So it's been just go, go, go. And that's something that I've struggled with my whole life is this idea of like not focusing on one thing. And so therefore kind of doing everything mediocrely, if you will. And it's a problem. That's hard. That's hard to sort of combat that. But I'm a big believer that you can do a lot of things. And my big mantra going into 2023 is legitimately delegate to elevate. Like, I am trying to hire things out. I think you can relate to this as someone who's also a producer, also a host, you know, and has like a ton of skills. When you have a huge skill stack, you feel like you should do it all. Like, why would I hire someone else? Right.
Exactly.
I could just do it.
Why would I pay to do something I know I can do?
Literally, like I'm also a full stack developer, which is like a skill that I rarely tap into. But I now am reworking on the Shawnee Show website and I'm sitting there like killing myself doing it on this drag and drop thing. And I'm like, why don't I just code it myself? So then I started coding it and then I was like, oh, why don't I just go use this? So then I start using that. And I was like, all right, it just became so messy. And I think at the end of the day, like when you have so many skills, it's a blessing and a curse because you start, you know, you start just trying to do it all. And I'm really trying to hire things out this year because there are a lot of like the certain things that I can do with very minimal effort. Being on camera, hosting shows, I love doing that. I can talk to people all day. It's the production side of things that's a lot more arduous for me. So if I can hire all that out, I mean, what a delight. I can accomplish so much more. And I love doing like the business stuff, being chief of staff. I love handling phone calls like that. I love, you know, wheeling and dealing. Like that's my ballpark. That's where I thrive. But if I can start hiring things out, you know, as let's say like the social media director of the Jewish Journal, I'm starting to get my VA to create all of the graphics for me. So I'm not sitting there creating a bunch of Canva graphics for Instagram. That's just a waste of my time. Like I'm good at it, but it's just a waste of my time. You know, I can streamline that process. So I think it's about figuring out obviously your priorities and stuff, but I don't think that you necessarily have to like, I don't think that you have to pick. I really don't. I want to prove this year and the next year, like just the fact that you don't have to choose and that you can do it all, but you do need a good team. You do need support. You can't do it alone. That's one thing that I believe in.
I'm really glad that you said that because I am a believer that you can do it alone. I've been doing it alone and I do well alone. Whenever I used to fill out resumes back when I was 17, 18 and you list your skills at the top and my mom, you know, would help me out with my resume, she would say, put in your skills, team player. And I would say, I'm not a team player. I've always done everything my way and it always ends up being the right way and things get done well. But what I want to ask you is I've struggled with delegating because I'm such a control freak. I want things to be done my way because I know this sounds very conceited. It's usually the right way. I can rely on myself to get things done. I can always count on me. I can't count on other people. I've been screwed over many times before and I have delegated before. Every time I've delegated someone, it just never come out the way that I want it to. So when you're implementing this new mantra in 2023, how are you going to be able to stop yourself from just being like, oh, that's not how I want it to be. Now give me the reins back.
What a good question, because I also struggle with that. It's funny, there was like a random reel where it was asking you these questions, and one of them was working alone, working in a group. And I just kept thinking of all the instances where I work in a group, I just end up having to do everything.
Yeah.
And it's so annoying. And there was literally one time in college during one group project that I can think back to that I didn't have to do everything, and I was only the video editor. And this group, it was three people. I remember it was Brian and what was this other guy's name? I can't remember. But we all worked together. Oh, John. We all worked together so seamlessly. Like, they went and filmed everything. They did everything perfectly. And then they sent me the footage and all I had to do was edit it. I couldn't believe it. Like, my eyes were shocked. Compare that to like a radio project I did. I had to do every single thing. I wrote out all this, and we were like a group of six for that. And I did everything. I ended up having to step in as host because the person that was hosting freaked out midway, like during our final project, freaked out during the presentation. So I literally jumped in and I was like, oh, she had to go to the bathroom, you know, and then proceeded with the show. So, you know, my whole life, like, group projects have been a real big struggle. And I agree, like, that's a hard thing for me as well. But I am finding that, you know, as I get older, you have to let go of the reins for perfection. Like, you can't necessarily want everything to be super perfect. But at the same time, there are good people out there. There are talented people out there who know what they're doing. And it's a matter of finding them. And it's really, really hard to find them. But when you find someone who's talented and good, you never let go. This video guy that I worked with for the Souf Gagnon thing, he's now going to come with me to the Golden Globes. We're doing red carpet interviews. He's coming with me for all the other Jewish Journal video projects I have because he was great. I barely explained my vision and he legitimately delivered exactly what I wanted. So, you know, my VA, I just hired a VA out of the Philippines. Her name is Princess. She's incredible. She's, you know, it's a process right now. We're in the first couple of weeks. So there's a lot of training. There's a lot of, you know, learning and stuff. But I'm happy to, you know, as long as someone's willing and they're sharp and they can learn, then I'm happy to have that time and that flexibility at the beginning for them to sort of get their bearings, because eventually that's going to be so much more worthwhile once they really understand how I like things done and my system. And yeah, you know, trust me, I've tried to train so many people in the past and it's been an absolute catastrophe. That's why I'm doing Ultimate Podcaster. It's the course that I'm releasing for podcasters. I want it to be a legitimate one-stop shop for people to learn how to podcast, because finding production help is so hard. And I'm sure you can relate to this. Like, people are, I could send a 20-minute tutorial video on how to do something and they will still send it back improperly. And these are talented people. So I really want to just build a workforce out there that can, you know, I'm trying to help people learn skills for things that I actually need help with as well. You know what I mean? I want to find someone who's going to take my course and be like, hey, I crushed it. Let me produce for you. And I'll be like, yeah, please, please do. Please do.
That's awesome. That's really exciting. Where can people find that, or is it available yet, or when will it be available?
In due time. Princess just finished all the slides for it, because I had the entire outline for the course written up for, I don't know, 6 months now, and I wasn't able to get to creating the slides or anything like that. So she's been crushing it. She finished all the slides, and I'm recording part one actually after this. And I like to, so that's another thing, by the way, when it comes to efficiency and getting things done, stacking things that are in the same realm of skills is so important. So I don't take, you know, if I have phone calls, I back them up, right? Like from 10 to 2, it's like phone calls, let's say. And it, you know, everything in the morning is, let's say, graphic creation or whatever it is that I have to get, scheduling social posts. Then the afternoon can be spent recording. If I'm doing podcast editing, I'm trying to edit a bunch. You know, I'm trying to, like, once I'm in a flow, I'm in a flow. So I think that stacking your tasks is a lot more important, and it's going to be way more efficient for you. And so I, like, at the beginning of the week, although my week is so continuous, it's hilarious when I say things like that. Like, I like to figure out, what do I need to get done? You know, what's my situation right now? And obviously that's continually growing, but I will intentionally try and stack those tasks that way it makes sense logistically. So I'm not going from a phone call to a podcast to a this to a that. It's just so inefficient.
So when you've put out so much stuff through the years, whether it's you on air or behind the scenes, you're going to have successes, you're going to have failures. There's going to be times where there's mean comments, where something doesn't perform as well as you would have hoped. I remember you telling me, and I hope you don't mind me sharing, that you did an interview with Gary Vee, who's everyone knows who Gary Vee is. It didn't do as well as you would have hoped it would. Usually everything that Gary Vee does turns to gold. So how do you deal with when you're really proud of something that you've put out and it just doesn't get the positive feedback or the views, the likes, the clicks that you want it to? And how do you not let it allow your sense of self-worth and your psyche and your motivation to keep doing it?
That's so interesting. I honestly don't care. Like, positive feedback to me is a lot less valuable than, or it impacts me a lot less than negative feedback. Mm-hmm. I definitely can go down like a bad mental rabbit hole with negative feedback. But over the years, I've allowed it to sort of stop getting to me. What's funny though is like, if someone attacks me personally, I care a lot less than if they attack things that I'm working on. For example, like the Jewish Journal, I run the Instagram now and I have for the last few weeks. And it drives me crazy how negative people are in the comment section for it. Cause I put so much time and effort into curating the content, to making the graphics. I love this stuff. And I love our paper. It's like a really meaningful community paper. We are ranked the best Jewish paper in the nation, like consistently, year after year. We're freaking phenomenal. And our content is meaningful. It's thoughtful. It's not like hot takes. It's really reasonable takes. It's nuanced, and it's just a beautiful piece of publishing. Like, I'm a big fan of it. And online, I also, everything that we put online, a lot of it goes into the paper and vice versa. And I really, really love the content we produce, but we get so much hate on our Instagram. I mean, it's insane. People will, they just pile on and they're so aggressive. And what's worse to me is that it's like, you know, a community page, right? This is the Jews. This is like my people, my tribe. And they're all so mean. And I think that they think it's like some machine behind it that's creating the content for everything. But it just gets so crazy. So, you know, if I get like a bunch of random stuff on my own personal page, or, oh, I hated this, or go die, like whatever, you know, the death threats have never stopped. Since I had the Saniac podcast, I used to get like the most ridiculous death threats, because the reality TV world is like full of death threats. That's like one of their shticks. But I just don't even care as much. But when the Jewish Journal gets hate, it does get to me. I'm like, why? Like, what? This is supposed to be community, you know? But I am really trying to not let it. I mean, I shouldn't take it personally at all, because it's so not a personal attack. If anything, the stuff that's directed to me should feel worse. But there's just something about it that, I don't know, maybe it's because it's also like a family paper. Like, you know, I work with my dad and I know how much effort he puts into everything. And like, I know all of our writers and I know how much they put effort into everything. Like, we're not a clickbait paper, you know? We really, our pieces are phenomenal. Like, they're so freaking good. And so, you know, and sometimes I pick the wrong preview, you know, for the social media post, and all, you know, I take the blame for that, but I can't sit there and read 1,000 words and pick the exact pull quote that's, you know, I'm working off of what I'm kind of given. That's like, you know, the pull quote, the subheading, whatever, the first 3 paragraphs. But, and a lot of times it doesn't necessarily give the entire picture perfect view of the actual piece. So I get when people sort of have like an initial reaction to just what they're reading, but you know, click the link in bio to read more. Like, it says that for a reason. And no one ever does that. No one ever clicks the link in bio to read more. They just go off about those stupid headlines. Right. It's just driving me crazy. Yeah. So as you can see, it does upset.
No, it doesn't upset you at all. As we're going into the new year, I'm just curious, in 2023, what do you think, this is a very vague general question, what do you think good content is nowadays? It obviously changes all the time.
What an interesting question. Everyone's always like, oh, your content needs to give people value, 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 value. It's like, it drives me crazy when I hear that word, because like, everyone's so obsessed with providing content for the viewer. And I'm a big believer of providing content that you like to create. Like, we kind of like forget about that, you know? Everyone calls themselves a creator, but are you actually creating out of a love for creation, or are you creating because you're trying to pander to an audience? And, you know, it is obviously easier to grow anything in a niche. Like, I know when I start marketing Ultimate Podcaster, that's going to be way easier to grow than Shawnee Show. But I don't, you know, I'm not trying to turn Shawnee Show into like a niche show. The reason why it's so ridiculously general and broad is because I'm general and broad, and I create the stuff that I love to create, because I genuinely feel like I am a creator. And, you know, I think that the content, yeah, it's a tricky question. You know, it's like, it should add value to people, sure. But at the same time, do what you love, like have fun with it. People really lose sight of that.
I really like that you said that. And that's kind of the mindset that I've been wrestling with over the last few months with regards to this podcast, because like you said, and you know, I know all the tried and true tips and strategies that all the best people in podcasting advise you to do. Get big guests, send out mass emails, people with big social media followings, do this, do that, have them retweet, blah, blah, blah. And I've done that. I've had some people on this show in the past 2+ years who are really big names, big followings, people in the entrepreneur world, in the athletic world. I just didn't get any joy from it. These are people I don't really know. I don't have any connection with. And we're doing the thing in over Zoom, which allows for even less connection than something in studio like your show does. So I kind of made the executive decision within the past few months. You know what? I'm only going to talk to people that I care about. I don't care if they don't have a blue check mark and 500,000 followers. I do this for me because I know that I have way more joy talking to someone that I know and care about like you, Shawnee, as opposed to the X person who was on Shark Tank in 2018 that I had on my podcast in 2020, who I have no relationship with.
Yeah, it's such a fine line. The thing is, I just don't create content to grow. Like for work, maybe it's a little different. You know, for the journal, I am looking for things that are going to have a growth mechanism to them for sure. But at the same time, like I just think for my own personal stuff, like I just don't give a shit. You know, I don't really care. If it takes 10 years for Shawnee Show to get big, that's fine. I know eventually, like the content's so good. I have great conversations. I love doing it. I'm never going to niche down as a person. It's something that I've come to the conclusion of. Like I'm never going to be one. I just can't be one thing. I can do a lot of niche things, though. Like, I can do the food. I can do the reality TV talk. I can do Judaism. I can MMA. Do MMA. I can do sports, you know? I can do so many different things within those niches, but I will never just pick one lane. The idea of, like, pick your lane and stay in it, you know, stay in your lane, I never get that. Fuck staying in your lane. Like there should be no lane. You should be wide open. There is a signal for a reason. Just put it on and move, you know? Like I just don't think that you should have to stay in one thing. You should do what you love. Everyone like always lose sight of that. They're so focused on growth and growth and growth and growth. And I don't know. I mean, I make money. I have a real, I have like multiple real jobs that give me income. So I'm not really looking for everything else. And also, I think, listen, like the reason why I am doing Ultimate Podcaster is because I think it can be a ridiculous passive income for me. I think it can be one of those things that will be super easy for me to grow in a niche that I love and I'm obsessed with and I know how to be able to talk about for God knows how long. Been doing podcasting for like a decade now. So it's something that it's also something that I feel like people really need. But I just can't stand the idea of, you know, when people tell me, oh, well, you're never going to grow Shawnee Show. You're never going to do this. You should, like, my Instagram is so miscombobulated. Like, you would never be able to understand, like, you know, there's no niche on my Instagram. I don't provide value in my reels. It's just hilarious.
There's no box we can place you in, Shawnee. That's what we try to do with people these days. But you are one of one. So keep doing you.
Thank you. I can't fit in a box.
You did tell me at one point that you want to be a billionaire. Not only that you want to, but that you know you're going to become one.
Yeah.
How do you intend on doing that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Spot on. Well, first of all, content is king. And, you know, people have built media empires that have created billions of dollars before. Look at Oprah, right? She was like the OG. I think it's so feasible. Your goals, your dreams, like everyone always looks at me like I'm crazy when I talk about this stuff. But at the same time, anyone who really knows me, it's like, no, it's going to happen. You know, like they're like, oh, I could see that, right? The way that I see money is so different to, I think, how a lot of people see money. I don't see it as money. I see it as freedom. You know, I want to be able to do whatever I want, whenever I want. I want to be able to help whoever I want, whenever I want to. I want my parents to never have to think for another second in their life, like to be able to rest easy, to be able to sleep at night knowing that all of their kids and every single generation after them is totally taken care of. You know, I want my siblings to feel like they can. We have so many creatives in my family. My sister doesn't really work. My mom is an artist and she hasn't sold a painting in a while. You know, it's like, I want them to be able to just like live their life and enjoy and create and not have to stress about this stuff. And you might not need $1 billion to do that. Fine. Okay. But I want billions. I want them. I want that sense of ridiculous, ludicrous freedom that comes with having such a safety net of financial wealth. And, you know, and I also think that there's so many things I want to do, so many things I want to be able to help with, and I want to have the power to do that. And I think that funds are one of the big ways that you can get things done in an efficient way. Like, I don't like the government. I find them to be one of the most inefficient businesses on the face of the planet. They operate at a deficit. They're disgusting. Their budget is horrible. My grandma could clean up their budget so quickly if she went in there.
Like the U.S. budget of trillions of dollars.
Yes. My grandma would go in there. She'd be like, why are we building bridges that go nowhere? Why are we paying $20 for a roll of toilet paper in the White House? Like, you know, just the stupid things. She would cut everything down, buy this in bulk, do that. Like, I think that they're so inefficient. So to me, it's like, we pay all this money in taxes. It goes nowhere and it's meant to help people. I want to be able to take my own personal wealth, put that somewhere that's actually going to do shit for people, like create products that are going to help people, create infrastructure in other places that's going to do something meaningful. I think billions of dollars is one of the best ways that you can actually impact the world. People have a really bad perception on billionaires. Not that there's always not all billionaires are great, but I want to be a great billionaire. And I really want billions to be able to do that. And at some point, I want to buy a private island and create my own little nation.
So. If you were a billionaire, I hand you $1 billion right now. What's the first thing you do with it?
Oh my God. Well, definitely sell my mom's house and get her a new one. Get my sister a car. Get myself a car at some point. Get a house for me and my sister to go move into. Set up a studio. Create some sort of infrastructure that will be able to generate more income. Invest it for sure. Set up multiple different investment accounts. That way I can multiply that money 10x.
You've thought about this before.
Oh my God. I have a whole laundry list of things I want to do. Yeah. I've thought of it.
Dream for me, among many, but one big dream I've thought about recently, I would love to just have my home just be a production house. One yes! room is a studio just for recording, yes! one is just for editing. I want 30 screens everywhere. I'm a minimalist, but I want some just massive production studio where I can do this in person and edit all sorts of videos and have, an area for my staff and a little gym. And yes! Oh, that'd be so great.
Oh my God, that's legitimately, so I've always had, there's actually a house on Zillow that I've had my eye on for a long time. It got sold a year ago. It was really upsetting, but it had the perfect layout and I wanted to buy that house and the house behind it and turn the house behind it into a whole studio. I've legitimately dreamt about this where we have different sections. So it'll be warehouse style and you'll have the podcast section, you'll have the makeup section, you have a kitchen for food stuff. I'll have a little sports section, a little solo recording episode. Section. I just want literally a set for everything that I want to be able to produce. And then I want to have an entire other side for my team, the editing bay, the front desk, a green room, the kitchen lounge where everyone has fun and we do birthdays and stuff. And then the bottom floor will be the whole gym. I have thought about this so much, and not only just the gym, but one side is going to have all the mats where we can do jiu-jitsu and yoga and fun, striking and stuff like that. And then there's going to be a whole weightlifting section and a little cardio section. The cardio section will be little for a reason. And then, it's just going to be so great. And there'll be turf too, where we can do sleds and stuff. I've really thought this through.
I think it's so apropos that you had Gary Vee on your podcast because, and I'm a big fan of his and follow what he says. You kind of come from the school of hustle culture that Gary Vee promotes, which the overarching belief being, you love what you do so much and you do so much of it that it doesn't feel like work. It's just in Gary Vee's off time, he goes garage sailing and makes videos about it, even though he's a multi-bajillionaire. He doesn't need to be making $5 profits at a garage sale, but that's what he loves doing. And, if you love what you do, you never work another day in your life. So it's that kind of where you're at. You work so much, but it doesn't even feel like work because you love it so much.
Yeah, so that's where the delegating comes into play, because I want to get to the point where I'm only doing the things I love, which is legitimately running things. I love managing people. I love, I love being able to, I just want a really solid team. So that way all I have to do is the stuff that is most time efficient and the stuff that I love. Being on camera, being on air, I could just do this in my sleep. It's so much fun to me. I have a really good time talking to people, eating things on camera. If I could have a mukbang, I would, or a mukbang. There's so makeup tutorials. I'd love to do that kind of shit too. There's so many things that I love to do. And I really love the business calls. I love creating things and creating organizations and streamlining workflows. And it's just really fun for me. So Yeah, like in essence, everything that I do now is I do love doing. There are little tasks that I would like to delegate off of my plate, but that's actually been happening in the last few weeks with my new VA and with this new video guy. And so like I'm starting to see how that's going to unfold. And that's why I am ramping everything up in all these different areas, because like I can do that. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's definitely, I mean, you do need to figure out what it is that you love to do. I think it will always be work, but I also like, I really love working. I have a really good time doing it. I love feeling like I'm getting things done. I'm accomplishing things. Like my brain barely slows down ever. So, you know, yeah, I love it. Like I could just keep going. I could just keep going.
I love it. I was actually laying, I mean, I'm not a 2 a.m., 3 a.m. guy. I'm a 10 p.m. guy, but I was laying in bed at 10 p.m. last night. I was like, wow, there's so many things that I want to do. I want to write this. I want to podcast about this when I'm up at 5 a.m. tomorrow. I like you. I love what I do so much. I love, because you get such a feeling of fulfillment and joy from knowing that the work you're doing is impacting so many people. With the Ringer MMA show that I work for, Work On by Example, the fans of that show love that show and it makes their week, and there's moments that happen on the show that only we understand, and it's great. And I have other things like that as well. All of it's so fulfilling. I love it all.
Wait, I have to add a comment to that, because that's like a big thing for me is, if you live in LA, this is hard to understand. I mean, maybe it's a global issue, but there's a lot of problems in LA, like with people, with how they live, with their perception of reality. And it really upsets me, because I don't blame my individual girlfriends for editing their photos to death, or, you know, doing this and feeling so insecure. It's not their fault per se, right? I don't hold them responsible for that. But I do think that A, it leads to more insecurities in younger generations, and B, it's, you know, it's society has just screwed them up to such a degree. And I see that with everybody I interact with, and I interact with 80-year-olds all the way to, like, you know, 15-year-olds. My jobs really span a large age demographic and gender demographic. So I'm seeing like the way in which people live their life is so, tortured. People are really tortured right now. Like there is so much sadness, there's so much depression, there's so much anger and anxiety. Like the anxiety is just through the roof about so many things. And you'd be surprised. You look at some people who you think have it all. They're killing it. They're doing this and they're a great speaker, but they actually are like shitting themselves before they go up on stage, right? And they're so stressed out, and they actually care what they look like, and they care if, you know, their stomach looks a little fat or whatever. And there's so many random things like that. And then there's also the side of like this lack of integrity with a lot of the people that we see in the media, that when you have exposure to those people from the back end, you start to understand, wow, like these people preach an entire different practice than they actually live. And they have this massive disconnect between their public brand and their private brand. And, you know, there's so many different nuances like that within the entertainment world, within the content world, that I think are contributing to all of these factors that are negatively impacting people and are contributing to the way in which society is harming all this next generation of humans, and honestly the current generations, right, that are out there already. Like it's just such a negative impact. And that's one of the reasons why I love content and why I love doing what I do, because not, you know, I don't have everything figured out by any stretch of the imagination, right? And I think that there's so much that I need to work on constantly, but I love doing it publicly, and I love being able to be a presence and to be proud of my presence in public, and to know that what I put out there is an authentic, you know, representation of myself. Like that's one of the reasons why I love looking shitty on Instagram. Like that's a big, I think I look better in person than I do online. And that's something that I'm a big believer in. No makeup, bad hair, whatever it is, whatever I look like on my stories.
The
like,
lemon avocado face.
Yes, yeah. Everything. I think it's so important, because I feel like that is something that we don't get enough of. And so that's a really big thing. And how you're talking about how it brings you so much satisfaction to feel like that impact from people, I think that that is a huge reason of why I love creating and putting things out there, and why I'm really not a private person. I don't, you know, we did a privacy and internet class in college, and I remember thinking like, I just don't care. Like, you know, so somebody like taps into my phone screen while I'm like on the toilet, that's weird for them to do. Do you know what I mean? Like, but like, I just don't even, that's a human thing. I've never been embarrassed about human things. And I really want to make that like a public thing. And I think that content is one of the best ways to do that. And I'm fighting an uphill battle against the entire Los Angeles because everybody here is upsettingly disintegrityful. I don't even know what the word is for that, right? They just lack integrity. Yeah. They just lack a lot of it. And so I think that we need more of that. That's why I love what you do also. And what like the Ringer show is so awesome because it's such a stripped down MMA show. It's like really fun, you know? It's a bunch of guys just shooting it and talking about this sport in a way that's really organic and raw and not just like overly produced and, you know, with the lights, camera, action and the fake like thought up questions that are just pandering to everything. I really like that. It's authentic. It's not, and they're also not pandering to the UFC ever, which is great, right? And so I think that that's why, one of the reasons why I gravitate to people who really have that, you know, in them. And it's been something that I struggle with in LA all the time. Finding friends here who actually have that level of integrity is difficult. So yeah, I hear you on that. And I'm actually happy that there are people like you creating content like that because we need it.
So you're 30 years old, I believe, right?
Hey!
Yeah, so you're 30. So you kind of, you're able to see this kind of from an elevated sense. You've been around the block for a while. You've been in content for a while. You have the advantage of knowing a world in which a lot of this, all this stuff that we have now doesn't exist, whereas maybe kids in college or some of the young people that you're surrounded by in Los Angeles don't have that advantage because this is the world that they know. So what would you say to those people who don't see the world that you do to try to tell them this is not the end all be all, you're hotter than you think, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I can't imagine growing up with Instagram. Oh my God. We had YouTube? Like, I can't even fathom. I really can't fathom it. It's one of those things that I don't understand. I can't understand. I feel so bad for them that they have to grow up in this generation with that kind of pressure and even like having Snapchat and oh my God. It nauseates me to think of like what childhood would have been like with all of this stuff. Just so much worse, you know? So I can't understand it. All I will say is that it gets so much better. Like life gets oh my God, so much better. I used to deal with immense depression. I used to deal with taking things personally really hard. I would isolate myself. I used to feel like, you know, if somebody didn't, like if people didn't text back, like, oh my God, they hate me. But I don't even text back now. You know what I mean? So it's like, and I don't hate anyone. I just, I'm freaking busy. Like, so I just think that learning how to not take anything personally is so important. The best thing you can ever do is to literally fake things until you make them. Because, for example, like, okay, let's say you think a friend is mad at you, right? But they're not actually mad at you. But you think that they're mad at you. So you go out of you feel uncomfortable around them. You start acting like they're mad at you. That tension starts to build. And then next thing you know, they are mad at you because you're being a little bit weird, right? And then now you've built this really weird dynamic with someone. But if you had just told yourself, okay, they're not mad at me. Like, I'm just taking this personally for some weird apparent reason. You know, this is actually so irrelevant. Nothing's actually happened here. Let me stop overthinking. And then you go into that environment without overthinking, not thinking that way. That scenario is going to end up a lot better in the long run for you. And the other thing is, you know, reality is only your perception, right? So even if someone's mad at you, if you're not aware of it or you don't care about it, it doesn't have to bother you. Like you can live in your own little world. You don't need to live in the actual, you know, you don't need to think about other people. You don't have to think about what are they thinking about? What are they doing? Like your perception is the only thing that matters. So if you just focus on keeping your perception positive and you focus on only thinking about things that bring you joy and positivity and light, then none of that stuff has to actually impact you. Like it doesn't actually matter. Who cares if someone's mad at you? You know, are you mad at them? No. So treat them fine. You know,
I'm so inspired by you right now, Shawnee. And we haven't talked about eight of the bullet points that I wanted to get to. I suppose this is why you do a 3-hour podcast. So that you can try to squeeze all that in. I'll choose the lesser of the controversial topics here.
Wait, there's controversial topics?
Yeah, there's controversial topics. But we don't have enough time for it. It's so controversial that we don't have enough time for it that if we were to get into it, it would be a disservice to the topic for how little time we spend on it. So I'll talk talk about this with you instead. You are the crypto queen. You love NFTs. You were really big on Twitter Spaces and in Clubhouse during the pandemic, especially when all of this kind of blew up. You're very intelligent, and I come to you for insight on all of this. Now, NFTs are in a weird period right now. We spent 2020 and 2021 being told how amazing they are. This is the future. I mean, Bored Ape Yacht Club was everywhere, taking over the world. People are spending exorbitant amounts of cryptocurrency buying these animated pictures of animals and people. And all of it has seemed to have cooled off, and all the people who were naysaying that all of this is dumb feel vindicated. NFT prices and Ethereum and Bitcoin prices are all not great right now for those of us who are invested in the long haul like me.
Thanks for the reminder.
What do you have to say about the state of the industry right now? And do you think this is doomsday? Everyone, all the naysayers were right and it's all done, or this is just... You know, this is a new concept in crypto, but this is not a new concept in the world of economics. So is this just an economic blip, or is this like crypto's done?
You know, the markets are shitty across the board. So it's a hard time just in general, I think, financially for everything. And I think that always is going to play into it. We've seen crypto go through many fluctuations, up and down, up and down, up and down, multiple times. And so I do believe that there will be a resurgence, particularly within crypto, Bitcoin for sure, Ethereum for sure, because these have use cases. These have long-term use cases that we can actually see. They're tangible and they are going to be beneficial. And how long it's going to take for them to come back up, who knows? My portfolio would like it to happen sooner rather than later. I think everybody's would. NFTs is a different ball game. I believe that the technology for NFTs is incredibly useful, especially when it comes to ticketing and events. I do believe that that is one use case for NFTs that is just unbreakable and the future for sure when it comes to ticketing and events. It's hard to argue against it, really, especially when you factor in like how inconvenient regular tickets are now and how much more convenient they can be in the future. So I do believe there's that. The art aspect of NFTs has always irked me just a little bit because I come from a family of artists, and not a single one of my friends who is in NFTs has ever tried to buy a physical piece of art from any of my family members. And they have seen multiple photos of the art. They know what's in my house. They've been to my house. They've seen my mom's art. They know what they have to offer, and it's phenomenal. My sister is also an incredible artist. My little sister also, she does custom shoes and sneakers. And so all of my friends, not to call them out, but legitimately the NFT space was full of just clout chasers, and they were using it to growth hack online and social media, which is fine, but be honest about it and don't go about pandering to, oh, we're here to support the artists. We're here to support the artists, when you're legitimately not. You don't give a shit about artists. You don't at all. Like, they don't care, you know? So I've always had a problem with this idea that it's for the artists when I don't feel like it is at all. And at the end of the day, a lot of these artists get screwed in their projects anyways. I think that there is a huge value to the technology of NFTs, but whether or not the real benefit is, you know, in buying this like digital art, I don't know that that's really there. Like, you can't, like, listen, everyone always jokes, like, you can't copy paste, you know, or control whatever and save the screenshot, but you can literally like just screenshot any NFT and it's yours. Like, you can hang it up on whatever wall, and you might get sued if you put it up on, you know, a commercial wall or something, but you can have it in your house. Why not? Who's you know, no one's gonna kill you if you print out a Bored Ape that's not yours.
I had a V friend, the Caring Camel, proud owner of it. And when I moved into my place in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, my mom printed out a photo of the Caring Camel and put it in a frame by my bedside. So, like, you actually can do that and go around claiming it's yours. It was mine, but I could have acted like it wasn't.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's like, you know, people, they like to act all like uppity about things with that. But yeah, you know, there's just so many people in the NFT world are just full of it. And they're really not there for the artists. And they have all these like deep, meaningful Twitter spaces about how they're there for the artists and for the artists. It's like, dude, shut up. Like, you're actually not. I actually know all of you in person. I know the behind the scenes conversations. All you want to do is make money out of this, you know? But yeah, the tech is there. Crypto is for sure there. I mean, there's a real long-term use case for crypto in and of itself, right? Like we're moving away from these borders and countries and things like that with a more just global workforce, a global economy, global, like everybody, we're all global citizens at this point. I've been to so many places and I think it's crazy how hard it is to immigrate to certain countries. I think it's so, it's just crazy that there are like these massive barriers, you know, and it just seems, it seems so nuts to me because the world I feel like should be, you know, our oyster, not to be like cliche, but it is there. Like everyone is just a person and they just happen to be born in a different place. And like, I just don't think that there should be these massive barriers. And I think borders are a kind of an issue. So I do think crypto does help break those down, which is awesome.
Whew, Shani Smith, everybody. She is a ball of energy. It is an honor to call her a friend. I've had the pleasure of sitting down with her in Los Angeles, in Las Vegas, really getting to know her, to talk to her, to pick her brain. And she taught me a lot here on this episode. And I hope you are all able to take away some value, the buzzword of the day, from this conversation as well. If you did like it, DM me on Instagram. Tell me what you liked. If you didn't, tell me that too. Like Shani, I also take constructive criticism to heart. So, life update, actually hopping on a plane in a matter of hours, going on another adventure where I will be taping for the first time an episode of the Found Generation podcast with a guest in studio, not an actual studio like Shani and I were envisioning for our futures, but just a little piece of equipment that allows me to record podcasts in person right next to someone instead of doing it over Zoom. I'm very excited for that. I can't wait to bring it all to you. Until then, have a great rest of the week, and I'll talk to you very soon.